Each weekday during February, the Jefferson Daily is airing excerpts from important African-American speeches in honor of Black History Month. These original recordings help tell the history not just of African-Americans, but the history of America as a whole. And you might find, as in today's speech, that they also have a strange way of speaking to the present. Here's the host of our series, Southern Oregon University journalism professor D.L. Richardson.
When Benjamin Hoots took over as director of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, he stated these words, "The train is running toward freedom. We invite you to get on or off at your pleasure, but for God's sake, don't stand on the track unless you want to be run down." Hoots approached this position with the same fire and dedication he did when he was appointed as the first Black judge to preside over a criminal court in Memphis, Tennessee. The following is perhaps his most famous speech, delivered at Gustavus Adolphus College in Minnesota in 1978.
Somebody asked Dr. King one day, "Dr. King, do you think that changing the law will change men's hearts?" He says, "I'm not particularly concerned now about changing men's hearts. I want the right to drink from a water fountain, to use a restroom. And unless you've been up and down these highways like I have and felt in your own body the stings of discrimination, you don't really know what it's like. And I don't care what a man thinks about me as long as I use that restroom and drink that water fountain. I'll wait until later to change his heart. I want the law changed now so we can enjoy some decency and some parity and some equality now." And that's all this thing is about. And this is to make America a better nation for all of us. For I saw a recent poll that said that the 20% of all of the young Black people between the age of 18 and 35 have given up on this country. And they think it will take a revolution to change it. My brothers and my sisters, that's dangerous to every white and Black man and woman in this nation. Time magazine calls it a growing underclass. We surrender our liberty so easily and so quickly. And I go to the airport tomorrow morning down in St. Paul or Minneapolis. I will go through a buzzing machine, and if I set it off, I'll hold my hands up and smile while I'm hassled. And today I saw them going through my briefcase, just pulling everything out. And I do it gladly, and you do it. Why? Because I don't want that plane to be bummed in the middle of the air. So little by little, we lose the democracy that we have inherited. And let nobody fool themselves. This is a great land, and this is a great country. And we do have a marvelous opportunity, those of us who live here now. But if we are to pass on to our children and to our children's children the type of democracy that we have inherited, we must be vigilant about the future. And we must make sure that the rights and opportunities that have been guaranteed by the Constitution in these years must be extended to all of those who live beneath the sun that rises and sets on America every day. This is our challenge and this is our opportunity. And so I support the concept of affirmative action. When I look at our nation today, more than 2,000 cases were filed in 1976 by white males who feel that there is a thing called reverse discrimination, and that's a ludicrous, stupid statement to make, because in this nation, all we're trying to do is have a reversal of discrimination and not reverse discrimination, to open the doors that have been closed. I never shall forget, just a few days ago, I addressed a meeting of the National Conference of Christians and Jews. And one of my Jewish friends came up to me and told a story of something that happened to him down in Florida many years ago. He had a Black chauffeur, and he said they were driving from New York. When they got down to Florida in one of those small towns, there was a big sign up that said, "No dogs and Jews allowed in this town." And my Jewish friend said he sat there with tears in his eyes, but then something strange happened. His chauffeur, who was Black, turned around and said, "Mr. Bloom," and he said, "My chauffeur was crying." He said, "And look, did they even think enough of me to put my race on the sign? No dogs, no Jews allowed." And they didn't even think enough of Black folk to say, "And no Blacks." It was understood we were not allowed. And now we come knocking boldly at the door of democracy, asking for equal opportunity and a chance. And we come not just for ourselves, but we come to make this nation better. For whenever we fence out creativity, whenever we fence out the talent of those who have so much to offer, this nation suffers. And that's what Dr. King was about. And I respect and admire his memory. And I respect and admire those who can look at this peaceful warrior so lied on and so criticized, who went to jail 39 times, who had a message not just for Black folk, but a message for every man, woman, boy, girl, and child who lived in America and indeed this world. Here was a man who never gave away to hatred. I've seen him in some moments when I don't understand what it was that kept him moving. I've seen him as he endured the stings and arrows of outrageous fortune. I've seen him as he came to a town and the newspaper with headline is coming with, "Here comes this sheep, this wolf brother in sheep's clothing, trying to destroy the good relations between the Negroes and the whites in our city." And that good relation consisted of Negroes in the ditch and white folk with their foot on their necks. And Martin King had to endure all of that. His friends lying on him, people talking about him, being threatened. I watched him speak night after night into the floodlights, knowing that he had received death threats, never knowing when a bullet would come. And one day that bullet caught up with him on the 4th day of April, 1968. And I remember I was on my way to see him that day because we had talked the night before and had made an appointment to deal with some things that were concerned to us and to this nation. And I remember just a few years before that when he had come to Memphis for a meeting of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and how he'd come out to our house that night, and in one of the few times that I was privileged to know him, he relaxed as he was singing some of the songs that you were singing tonight. And one of the greatest heritages ever passed down from folk who could not read their names in boxcar letters, but who, in the dim and dark night of cruel slavery, looked up and saw stars still shining in the night. I think it was the poet Count T. Cullen who said, "And yet do I marvel at this curious thing to make a poet black and bid him sing." Some of the most profound words ever uttered, some of the most beautiful thoughts ever contained in the hearts of men were written and sent on the air by black folk who were tied up in slavery. When I was a college student and singing in the choir, I remember singing a song that later on perplexed me because I used to sing it with gusto and with joy. "Before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave. Go home and be at peace with my God." And it dawned on me that the folk who wrote those words, the folk who were singing them, were indeed physically tied to chattel slavery, who did not own the shoes on their feet, nor the coat on that back. And that little corn chuck pattern on which they slept did not belong to them, but they discovered a great and profound truth that even though their bodies belonged to the master, even though they could be sold on the cattle like cattle and hogs on the auction block, that there was something that could never belong to the slave master, that was their soul and their spirit. And they discovered what blind Bunyan discovered and Milton discovered, that there's something about me that can never be taken away. And before I'd give that up, before I'd become a slave in my mind, I'd be buried in my grave and go home, be at peace with my God. It was those people who gave us insightful songs. We thought every time they talked about "Swing Low, Sweet Chariot," they were talking about eschatology and long white robes. And some of our less secure and immature minds among black folk fell out with slavery songs. But every time black folk were singing about "Swing Low, Sweet Chariot," they were sometimes talking about Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman coming down with a freedom train, not going to heaven in the by and by, but to Ohio and Pennsylvania in the here and now. God has given to us the gift of song, and we have given it to the American nation and to this world. And so I close tonight by saying the one thing that Dr. King stood preeminently for was that we should love everybody.
Benjamin Hooks speaking in 1978. 10 years before this, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his "I've Been to the Mountaintop" speech. We'll hear that speech tomorrow.